Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, chapter 5, the cause of all causes, text 3.
Sarvam yetad bhavan veda, bhuta bhava bhava prabhu, karama lakavad vishvam, vijnana vasitam tava. Sarvam yetad bhavan veda, bhuta bhava bhava prabhu, karama lakavad vishvam, vijnana vasitam tava. Sarvam etat bhavan veda, bhuta bhavya bhavat prabhu, karama lakavat vishvam, vijnana vasitam tava. Sarvam,
sarvam,
all everything.
He
certainly,
certainly.
Etat,
this,
bhavan, your good self. Veda,
no.
Bhuta, all that is created or born.
Bhavya,
all that will be created or born. Bhava,
all that is being created.
Prabhu,
you,
the master of everything. Kala amalakava, just like a walnut within your grip. Vishvam, the universe. Vijnana avasitam, within your knowledge scientifically. Tava, you are. My dear Father, narrowly speaking, all this is known to you scientifically, because whatever was created in the past, whatever will be created in the future, or whatever is being created at present, as well as everything within the universe, is within your grip, just like a walnut. Purport. Brahma is the direct creator of the manifested universe and everything within the universe. He therefore knows what happened in the past, what will happen in the future, and what is happening at present. Three principal items, namely the living being, the phenomenal world, and the controller, are all in continuous action, past, present, and future. And the direct manager is supposed to know everything of such actions and reactions, as one knows about a walnut within the grip of one's palm. The direct manufacturer of a particular thing is supposed to know how he learned the art of manufacturing, where he got the ingredients, how he set it up, and how the products in the manufacturing process are being turned out. Because Brahma is the firstborn living being, naturally he's supposed to know everything about creative functions. Om Gyana Timanam Visya Gyananjana Shlaka Chakshun Militamena Tasmai Shri Gurudev Namaha. This Srimad Bhagavatam is giving you first-hand experience of what's going on at the beginning of the universe. Now you have to accept it or reject it as you like. But you should bear in mind that if you base your acceptance or rejection on your own sense perception, then your situation is limited. We have a paradox in us, in that we desire to verify or confirm all these statements of the Shastra with our imperfect senses, and that is not possible. Once you accept this point, then you can read Srimad Bhagavatam with a peaceful mind. It is not possible for you to verify or corroborate the information in Srimad Bhagavatam with your mind and senses in their present condition. Therefore, we have the process of bhakti yoga for purifying your mind and senses so they can actually become directly aware of spiritual truth. But in our present condition, as long as we are under the spell of material nature, you cannot directly experience these things that Narada Muni is asking about and Brahma will explain. But this doesn't mean you'll spend your whole devotional career with just a simple faith and no realization. No,
the techniques of bhakti yoga purify your faculties of perception so that you can see the truth. This is very important, to see the truth. What is it that you should see? You should see all the energies as belonging to Krishna. Once you see all the energies belonging to Krishna, then you'll see Krishna. But how can you think you're going to see Krishna as long as you see his energy separate from it? First, you have to learn to understand that the energy has a proprietor. Otherwise, the proprietor will not reveal himself to you. Krishna says this in Bhagavad Gita. Naham prakasha sarvasya yoga maya samavrita. Krishna says, I do not reveal myself to everyone. I reserve the right of who I expose myself to. This yoga maya works in two places. This yoga maya, or internal potency of the Lord, works in Goloka, and it works on the earth when Krishna manifests. But yoga maya does not work in Vaikuntha. Yoga maya's purpose is to work with Krishna for his personal pastimes of Goloka. So yoga maya is there at the topmost planet of the spiritual world, and yoga maya is there when the Lord descends with his personal abodes to the earth. But in Vaikuntha, there's no yoga maya. Yoga maya is Krishna's personal assistant for his most personal pastimes. And his most personal pastime is as a sort of human. Two hands playing a flute. Sort of human. Nara-lila. Human-like leelas. But at every step of Krishna's pastimes, he shows you that he's not an ordinary human. You know, Angani Yasya Sakalendriya Rittivanti, or you should know that. The Supreme Personality of Godhead can act in any kind of way with any of his senses. He can hear through his nose. He can eat through his eyes. He can impregnate through his eyes. All his senses perform the functions of the other senses. But when Krishna appears in his Nara-lila, in his original form, Shyama Sundar, generally he eats with his mouth and he sees with his eyes, because he does not want to disturb the sweetness of the loving exchanges with his intimate devotees. In Vrindavan, the devotees are more attracted to Krishna's sweetness than his opulence. In Vaikuntha, there is the majestic display of opulence. But in Vrindavan, there is the display of sweetness. You see, you know that the Lord is Sat Aishvarya Purna. He is full of all opulences, unlimitedly. Wealth, strength, fame, knowledge, beauty, renunciation. Now, in Goloka Vrindavan, the Lord displays the most confidential depth of his opulence of beauty. The most confidential depth of the beauty opulence is Krishna's Madhurya Lila with his consorts. That is part of the beauty opulence. Such sweetness between Krishna and his consorts, or Krishna and his mother and father, or Krishna and his coward boyfriends, that is the specialty of the topmost planet of the spiritual world. Narada Muni is asking his father, Brahma, about the material world. The material world is an insignificant portion of Krishna's total manifestation. But even this insignificant material world, the whole cosmos, with its uncountable universes, it is inconceivable to the demigods who run this world. So how can any puny human being think he or she is going to understand the cosmic manifestation when even the demigods say the material cosmos is inconceivable to them? Just like Brahma He's born from the lotus flower coming from the navel of Garbhadakshai Vishnu. Therefore, Garbhadakshai Vishnu is also known as Padmanabha. The lotus flower. This is Krishna's artistry. You think that the universe might have happened by some chemical laboratory procedure, some chemicals swished together, but Krishna is showing you the universe happens by inconceivable personal artistry. From his navel comes a lotus flower, and from that lotus flower, Lord Brahma takes birth. And Lord Brahma doesn't know what to do. He doesn't even know where he came from. He just sees the lotus flower and a stem, but he can't see anything else. He doesn't see the origin of the lotus flower. You get this direct report from Srimad Bhagavatam. He even tries to speculate. How does Lord Brahma try to speculate? He tries to climb down from the lotus flower and go down the stem and see what's down there. What's the origin? But he can't. It doesn't work that way. Finally, he goes back to the lotus flower and begins to perform austerities in meditation. And then he becomes qualified to understand his situation, because the Lord directly gives him knowledge. Tene Brahma Hridha Yathati Kavaye. Lord Brahma is known as Adi Kavi, the original Kavi, or original scholar of the universe. And Lord Brahma gives his first-hand experience, because the Lord will give Brahma a vision of the Lord's personal abode. The Lord will say that I am pleased with you because of your austerities, because of your non-deceptive performance of bhakti yoga. Therefore, all of me, let it be revealed to you. My name, my form, my qualities, pastimes, all of it, I'll let you understand. And the Lord shakes Brahma's hand while giving him visions of Vaikuntha. So, when you chant the Brahma Samhita prayers, Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Jami, you are chanting Lord Brahma's direct personal experience. But it is significant that even Brahma can't understand his job. He can't understand how to arrange the planetary systems without being directly inspired by the Supreme Lord. Now, if the material world is inconceivable to even the demigods, what about the spiritual world? The Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as Trayadishvara. He's the Lord of the Threes. This is a good way to meditate on Krishna. Remember, we were explaining last week how we are teaching meditation here, but not some dry form of meditation where you sit inactively. No, we are teaching you how to make all your activities connected to Krishna, so that your activities remind you of Krishna. That is the perfection of life. Yoginam api sarvesham madgatenantaratmana shatavan bhajate yoma samayuktatamo mata. Krishna says, of all the yogis, the one who is always absorbed in my transcendental loving service is the best. Now, how are you always going to be absorbed in transcendental loving service? Krishna is speaking that art to Arjuna, who's not a sannyasi, he's not a Brahmin, he's a warrior and a family man. So Krishna is making it clear that anyone in any circumstance can always meditate on him if they know the art of how to make all their activities for Krishna's pleasure. That means whatever you do, there is a way to make it remind you of Krishna. Anything, your work, your family life, even sex, Krishna quite boldly says, Dharma Buddha Buddheshu Kamo Sri Varadarshava. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, I'll teach you how to have sex and you'll always remember me. So, this is the power of bhakti yoga. Anything, when done properly, can remind you of Krishna. Anything becomes a meditation when done under proper direction, according to the pleasure of the Lord. So this is our hope. This is our aspiration, our desire, that all our activities will remind us of Krishna, because everything belongs to Krishna. How can we not be reminded of Krishna when everything belongs to Him? Just like when you see, sometimes we see a wife here picking up the laundry of the husband. So the laundry reminds, of course, you know, whose laundry it is. Why not everything in the cosmos? It should remind you, this belongs to Krishna. And then you start thinking of Krishna. That is Krishna consciousness. Not that you lock yourself up somewhere and think of Krishna as separate from everything else. No. Bhakti yoga means the art of how to see Krishna in everything. Everything. Even the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Krishna showed Arjuna, I'm here too. I'll teach you how to fight and think of me. Even more. This is how provocative Bhagavad Gita is. Krishna not only says, I'll teach you how to have sex and think of me. He says, I'll teach you how to fight a war and have violence and think of me. This is how provocative Bhagavad Gita is. But only a devotee can teach you Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise you'll miss the point. What does Krishna say in the Gita? Mam anusmara yujyam cha. Fight and think of me. Fight and think of the Supreme Lord? People say, well, isn't God love? Why is he telling Arjuna to fight and think of him? It's like the hippies, they had their motto, make love, not war. Well, according to the standard of Bhagavad Gita, they don't know what love is or war. They have no idea what the proper function of love or war is. They have no idea. Real war means to establish the principles of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Kauravas, Duryodhana and company, they were materially qualified leaders. But they were not devotees. Therefore, Krishna wanted them out, even though they were materially qualified. What were the warriors in the battle of Kurukshetra thinking? Each side, Arjuna's side and Duryodhana's side, they're thinking, I can better serve the people. This mentality is unknown. Politicians who strive for office today, they're simply thinking, I want the opportunities to make myself rich. I want the influence. I want the fame. But the Kshatriyas in the battle of Kurukshetra, each side was thinking, I can manage the people better for their welfare. So Duryodhana and company, they were materially qualified to lead, to give protection to the people in a material sense, but they were not Krishna's devotees, therefore the Lord wanted them out. Because only a devotee can give real protection. So Krishna is showing you in Bhagavad Gita, you'll be able to fight Arjuna and be totally absorbed in me. This is what we're trying to teach everyone here. How to do your activities in total absorption in Krishna. How to make your work Krishna conscious. How to make your home life Krishna conscious. How to make your relationships Krishna conscious. Everything can be yoga if you know the art. So this is the great mystery of Bhagavad Gita. And Lord Brahma, he's the head of our succession. This is the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. It starts with Lord Brahma and comes through Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya shows you how your emotions will be fully satisfied in Krishna. He shows you the emotional reaction of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and chanting the holy name. Sometimes Lord Chaitanya hears and speaks about the opulences of Krishna, how the material creation of Krishna, although insignificant and limited, is not understandable by even the greatest demigods. How Mahavishnu breathes out the universes. Lord Chaitanya, he becomes absorbed in hearing about these opulences of the Supreme Lord. And then his emotions shift, and he longs to hear about the sweetness of the Lord. So in this way, when you read about Lord Chaitanya in Chaitanya Charitamrita, you can see these shifts in perfect emotion. How everything is gelled, all emotional content in your life is gelled by hearing about the Supreme Lord and serving the Supreme Lord. Sometimes Lord Chaitanya would hear various pastimes of Krishna or hear about the holy name, and various transcendental moods would awaken in him. This is to show you that bhakti is not for dead stones. It's the most lively thing. I would hope that some of you, when you're chanting, sometimes moods of humility awaken in you. And you think, oh, how wretched I am. I cannot chant the holy name properly. Krishna is there as his name, but I'm so unfortunate. I have no attraction for the name, although Krishna is directly there. These kind of moods should awaken in you when you chant. Moods should awaken in you when you hear about Krishna. But you'll have to be a bit patient, because in the beginning, we're so polluted. If you know anything about cars, if your car has an oil filter, if you don't change your oil filter, then it doesn't do its job of filtering the oil. So your engine system becomes so badly functioning, because it's clogged up, so to speak. The filter is not taking out the impurities. Similarly, when our senses are clogged up, then we can't properly taste the holy name. And we look for nectar in the material world. This is our problem, our hang-up, our disease, that we look for nectar in the material world. And then we're forced to do so many crazy things you never expect. That's why Prabhupada uses the phrase, you're embarrassed by material life. I'm sure some of you have had experience of doing things you never thought you would do. Just like Errol was telling us, he's not here. Did he come this weekend? Yes. Errol was telling us, well, I thought I would just have a couple of drinks. And then he ended up being completely embarrassed, spending $70, hungover for 2 days. This is the way material nature works. It doesn't go according to your plan. Things happen to you which you didn't imagine. A few years ago, in the USA, there was an example of some teenagers, very wealthy, prestigious family, and going to high school for rich kids. And their family was very wealthy, influential. The kids got whatever they wanted, cars and clothes and this and that, so much spending money. And they were bright kids too, so bright that they were accepted into the, they both wanted to go to the Naval Academy, where they train officers for the U.S. Navy. That means you have to be like in the top of your class. So that's how good karma kids they were, so to speak, you know. Wealth, opulence, influence, the Naval Academy, spending money, you know, good looking, you know. The classic things that you recognize as good karma. Janmaish Vaya Shruti Sri. Janma, good birth. Birth in a wealthy family, influential family. Aishvarya, money. Shruta, learning. And Sri, beauty. So they were, you know, I'm sure sometimes maybe in New Zealand you've met people like that who just, they just look like good karma in their past life. Persons, you know, they just, it's all easy for them. They look good. They got money. They don't have any worries. They shouldn't have any worries. They do have worries, of course. You can't live in this world materially without worries. But when you look at them, you think, oh, this person should have no worries. You all seen persons like that? A few, yeah. You get a little envious. Gosh, why couldn't I have a body like that? Thank God, they're born with a silver spoon in their mouth. You know, all the opportunities just unfold before them without any trouble. So these teenagers were like that. They were boyfriend and girlfriend.
Yeah.
What could be better?
Yeah.
Boyfriend and girlfriend, sense gratification, money, cars, opulence, going to the Naval Academy to be officers together. The perfection of teenage life. Sense gratification, money, and educational. Generally, you know, you get one or the other. It's like poor people. They have lots of sense gratification, but they don't have any money. You generally have to sacrifice. If you're going to study and get an education, it means you can't party. So there's always a trade-off. But it seemed like these guys had it all. Sense grat, money, education, you know, living in the, you know, living in Remuera, that kind of scene, you know. So then, what happened? Their boyfriend and girlfriend, they're just 16 years old. He was on the track team, and naturally, you know, it's a co-ed track team. So he's driving back from a track meet in another nearby city.
Yeah.
And one of the girl members of the track team hopped in his car. So it's all part of teenage life, you know. And so on the way back home, they stopped the car and decided to partake of some animalistic delights. So then, that was done. The boy decided, I cannot hide this from my beloved. I must tell her that I was unfaithful. So you might think, oh, that's very noble of him, or you might think that was pretty stupid of him, according to your perspective. Anyway, he told his beloved, you know, while we were driving back from the track meet, you know, me and that other girl, you know, something happened. His girlfriend just hit the ceiling. She said, there's only one way that you can get forgiveness. There's only one way I'll forgive you. Kill her.
This happened a few years ago in Texas.
Kill her, I'll never forgive you. This is the power of lust. So they made a plan. He called the girl up, the other girl, you know, who had fallen down lower with. And, you know, said, oh, let's go on a date. And so she, oh, such good taste you have. You realize, you know, that actually I'm the one, you know, not your girlfriend. So he picked her up and they drove out to some lonely part, desert road. And you can just imagine the girl thinking, oh, here we go again, it's going to happen again. Oh, this is so wonderful. Then all of a sudden, you know, it's one of those cars that the back seat goes down and leads to the trunk, to the boot, you know? You've seen cars like that? You can put the back seat down and get right into the boot in that way. So all of a sudden, the back seat comes down, and from out of the boot into the inside of the car comes the girlfriend. And she's got a, what do you call these weights that you, when you lift weights? She's got a dumbbell in her hand. Just, not the bar, but just the weight. And, she smashes the girl in her head with the weight. Then the guy stops the car, while his girlfriend is smashing her in the head with the weight. And he pulls out a gun and finishes the girl off. Yeah. And then they both dump the body. Okay, that was that. 16-year-olds. No one could figure it out. The police couldn't solve it. You know, because obviously, you know how it goes in American small cities like that. You know, the police would never suspect such, you know. They're darlings of suburbia to do such a thing. So it was an unsolved crime. The police just know she went somewhere and disappeared. So, life went on as usual. Boyfriend and girlfriend, they went to the Naval Academy together a year later. Perfect life, everything ideal, high society. And then, how does material nature work? The girl starts confiding in her girlfriends. You know, have you ever been so jealous that you would kill? I guess you all, the ladies know how ladies talk. No. I might have felt that, but you know somebody who did that. And so, you know, they were just girls, just, you know, being girls, you know, just laughing about everything. So, having these late night, exchanges, discussing late into the night as ladies at school do, especially university. So then the girl, she told him, once I was so jealous, I actually killed. And then she revealed everything to her girlfriends. Of course, the girlfriends, when they heard that, they freaked out. So they went and told the head of the Naval Academy. And he freaked out because, he had both these persons who did this crime in the Naval Academy. So, of course, they had to be arrested and, treated like, the ordinary criminals that they were. So here they are, at the height of society, Everything's working for them. But life takes a different turn, all because of intense lust and jealousy. Can you imagine her telling him, "I'll never forgive you. You only can do one thing to make me forgive you. Kill her."
The 16-year-olds.
You can't say they didn't get proper training. You can't say they didn't get the best education, materially speaking, that society could offer. You can't say they didn't know any better. But life takes sudden turns like that. You all should understand that. Don't think that you can live in material nature and things just all go on according to your plan. That's the illusion. I'll do this, I'll do that. This will happen, then that will happen. And life will work out generally according to my plan. Forget it. Doesn't work like that. Another example just happened recently. Another unsolved crime for about a year. A doctor and his wife were found dead on a desert road in California. And there were no clues, just a deserted road, and they were both shot dead in their car. Police couldn't figure it out for 1 year. But then 1 year later, they put some new detectives on the case, and they began going through the doctor's cell phone record. Cell phone companies can keep records of all your calls. So they noticed a lot of calls to the receptionist at the hospital where the doctor worked. So they hauled her in for questioning, and she spilled all the beans. That although the doctor was married, he was having an affair with the receptionist. And because this doctor, he'd already had like a triple bypass heart operation and still didn't work. So the doctors had told him, "Listen, doc, you've got like a year to live." So the doctor was thinking, I want to enjoy my last year. So not only do I just want to have a mistress, I want to kick out my wife and just, have fully this young girl. So what he did was, and he had been supporting this mistress, this receptionist at the hospital, and he was sending her money. And so naturally she was feeling very obliged. And the doctor, he was so caught up. "I've got just 1 year to live. What am I doing with my wife? This old bag, I got 1 year to live. And when this juicy number, why should I just visit her clandestinely? Why don't we just have it all now?" So then he told his mistress, the young girl, "Do you know anybody who can kill my wife?" She said, "Maybe I can arrange it." So they had it all planned. He gave her $30,000 up front to pay off a hitman. So the deal was that he would drive the wife on this lonely road, and then the hitman would be waiting, and he would shoot his wife and make it seem like a robbery and then disappear. But why were both of them dead? Because it turned out that the hitman was the real boyfriend of the receptionist. She was two-timing him. She was playing games with the doctor, to get his money, And meanwhile, her boyfriend, the one she got to do the contract killing, that was actually her real love. She was servicing them both, but he was the real one. So, the boyfriend gladly took the money, because he was a criminal, he wanted the money, and also he wanted to, he wanted to get rid of his competition too. Like, okay, you paid enough money, we've enjoyed your money, now we're going to get rid of you, and we got more money out of you. So he just deviated from the plot. Instead of just killing the wife, he first shot the man, the doctor, and then he shot the wife. Finished them both off. And then the girl realized, well, he's not going to stay with me because now he's got to take off, and hide from the law because he's already a criminal on the run. So that's why she broke down and told the police everything, because she realized, well, I didn't even get him. He's gone. He's run away. And I didn't get any money. I didn't get him. So he's got two dead people and, a mistress who was playing both sides, and she's lost the man that she wanted, and now her and the man are facing the death penalty because it's premeditated murder. And they'll give you the death penalty in the states for that. California, go to the gas chamber or lethal injection for that, because they planned it all out. It wasn't like in Hot Blood. It was all planned meticulously. So, did the doctor ever plan for such a thing to happen to him? No, he thought he had it all figured out. I'm going to just see a typical materialist. No concern for reactions. I got 1 year left. I've got to grab all the gusto I can, So it doesn't matter what I do, because when I'm dead, I'm dead. Let me even kill. What does it matter? My senses have to be gratified. That's the important thing. Here I am stuck with this old bag of a wife in her 50s, and that juicy receptionist is down there at the reception counter. Why do I have to sneak around with her? Why don't I just get rid of my wife and then I can just enjoy openly with this young girl? Never did he know. He was signing his own death warrant. He thought it was all so convenient. He's such a, you can see how lust blinds you. He even handed over the money first. Yeah. Handed over $30,000. Yeah. Generally, you hand a criminal money first, they'll just take the money and won't do the job. But this criminal, he had high motivation. He took the money and did the job and went beyond it also. So this is how material life is. You get caught up in it, and it drives you to do things you never thought would happen to you. You get implicated in situations you never thought would happen. And then you wonder, how can this happen to me? Why? Now, Krishna consciousness means how to become caught up in Krishna. By becoming caught up in Krishna's internal potency, things also happen you never planned for. And when you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, you can see Lord Chaitanya demonstrating that for you. Hearing certain things about Krishna caused Lord Chaitanya to react in certain ways. Certain pastimes of Krishna send Lord Chaitanya's emotions going this way or that way. So you're getting to see that actually the ocean of bhakti is full of varieties, and the experience is far different from the material ocean of repeated birth and death. Then we develop aspirations by hearing about Lord Chaitanya. Oh, let me just taste a little bit of what Mahaprabhu tasted. Then we realize I need qualification to do that. The qualification is, I endear myself to Krishna through service. Lord Chaitanya says that just one drop of understanding about Krishna's opulences can drown all the three worlds. But even greater than that is just one drop of understanding about Krishna's sweetness. Even Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha becomes attracted to Krishna's sweetness. When the Lord comes and displays his Naralila, his human-like pastimes, he defeats the pride of even Narayan in Vaikuntha. The pastimes that Krishna shows when he appears on earth, even Narayan doesn't see in Vaikuntha. So this is how special the Krishna Leela is. Just a little bit of understanding about Krishna's bodily beauty. You like bodies? Why not become absorbed in Krishna's body? Meditate on Krishna's body, not become absorbed, like merge. That's Damanya. But no, why not become absorbed in thinking of Krishna's body? He wears a necklace that are like white ducks. And Krishna himself is like a blue rain cloud in the sky. His peacock feather is like a rainbow. And his yellow cloth is like lightning flashing in the sky. And the gopis are like newly grown grains on the earth. And Krishna rains down upon the gopis the rain of his leela, his pastimes. So just by hearing about Krishna's beauty, Krishna's form, his qualities, his pastimes, that produces reactions in us. And in the perfectional stages of bhakti, you can't predict those reactions. You're caught up in the internal potency because of your service. We shouldn't think that material nature is the only energy that will offer us surprises and bewilderment. No. You don't want the surprises or bewilderment from material energy. You want the surprises of the internal potency. And in Chaitanya Charitamrita, you can read about that. How different realizations awaken in Lord Chaitanya concerning the holy name, concerning Krishna's pastimes. Lord Chaitanya is showing you this is what bhakti is like in the perfectional stage. This is what you should aspire for. But you must become qualified. How do you become qualified? You please Krishna's devotee, and then Krishna is pleased. More so than if you tried to please Krishna directly. Bhaktivinoda Thakur prays, I'm simply running after Krishna. I'm simply running after Krishna's devotee, shouting Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. He didn't say I'm running after Krishna. He said I'm running after Krishna's devotee, shouting Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. So any questions?
We know making a plan just for like the daily program, like getting up at a certain time, around here, reading there, service there. And with what you just told us about how unpredictable things are, especially in Christian service.
I said unpredictable once you become more absorbed in the internal potency of the Lord. You have to understand your position as a beginner. You know, you will, from the very beginning, taste the ever-freshness of Krishna. But these things we're talking about, like what Lord Chaitanya is revealing, these are the highest stages of bhakti. But Lord Chaitanya does want to freely give that out. Don't think, oh, it's so high, we'll never attain it. No, Lord Chaitanya came to demonstrate you can taste something like this. But you have to pay the price. Ordinarily, Krishna does not give that out. But through Lord Chaitanya, he's making it easily available. But true, even in your beginning stages, you'll see the ever-freshness of Krishna. Go on.
Oh, but even as you're giving the example of dwelling in the so-called, you know, material side of things, which, you know, I'm not high enough to be dwelling in quite spiritual things. But as I was saying, I'm trying to make a program, and material nature just has a tendency to throw things off. For example, if I'm doing a book or something, I might end up talking to a person for a very, very long time and put me off track. So on what attitude should I be approaching my program with?
It's Krishna's time. How can you use Krishna's time in the best way for Krishna's pleasure? It's not your time. You see, when we think everything is our time, then, oh, I got so much time to space out and make up my mind on my own. It's all my time. Do you ever catch yourself wanting time to space out? How many of you get? Jen, you catch yourself like that sometimes? Like, enough of everything being scheduled and regimented. I want some time to space out on my own. And you notice what you do? What do you do then? I didn't know it was that bad. I thought you'd say like daydream or something. Anyway, what do you do when you, you know, when your mind says, I want time to space out? What do you do, Donna? I've got a lot of sleepers here. Anyone else? Any creative daydreamers? You do that. You just kind of sit in your room and just,
what if?
Huh? Stu, does your mind sometimes tell you that?
Yeah, it's easy to give an example. So I went north, I was on second. I thought I was really getting the sense crack on spicing out that way. And then I started to think of Krishna.
Our problem is we think that we are restricted when we think of Krishna. This is our problem. We think there's freedom in the material energy. But thinking about Krishna and Krishna's service restricts you. That one is not like that. Thinking about Krishna is the unlimited world. But because of our conditioning, we think that I need some time to think about myself. You can't think of yourself separate from Krishna. So it's not that you become a non-thinker when you practice bhakti yoga. No, you actually become a real thinker. We just learn how to think about things in relation to Krishna. But sometimes you rebel against that. I want a break. I just want to think about myself as a separate entity for a while. Just me and what I want to do. That's like the hand rebelling against the rest of the body. Enough of bringing the food to the mouth. I'm going to think about myself as a separate thing. It's illogical. And that's why all of material existence is illogical. It's crazy. Any other questions?
Mm-hmm. Actually, some of us have more of a conscience than others.
You have to understand the danger of associating with Triguna Maya, goodness, passion, and ignorance. And these days, of course, it's very little goodness. The modes drag you. Because of your contamination, you have a susceptibility to the mode of passion and ignorance, and therefore the mode of passion or ignorance strikes, and you do wild things. That's why Krishna says, Prakriti Kriyamanani Gunai Karmani Sarvasha. Ahamkara Pumudhatma Kataham Nityumandite. The bewildered conditioned soul thinks that he is the doer of activities that are actually caused by material nature. What did you do? You took shelter of the modes of nature, and therefore you're dragged around in such embarrassing, abominable circumstances. So you could see, oh, I would never do such a thing. Like that girl to kill him, the only way I'll forgive you. But you're seeing the situation without seeing the modes of nature at work. The mode of passion and ignorance is pounding in her. Wrath is the mode of ignorance, passion is lust. And therefore she comes up with something like that. Now she chose to take shelter of the modes of nature. So it's not that she can just, you know, blame Maya. Maya made me do it. No, she took shelter of Maya. And then she got dragged. Didn't you ever in your life get so angry at somebody who you thought was hurting you that you just, you know, just somehow that person would disappear? Yeah. So why do you act like it's a, you know, strange thing? So they were bright kids, so they figured, yeah, why, you know, she thought, why just think about it? Why not actually do it? We're intelligent. We're future naval officers. And they didn't get away with it. Except she started blabbing to her girlfriends. Any other questions? Yes.
How do we keep our mind on short leash? Sometimes.
How do you keep your mind on?
On short leash.
Practice. Practice. That's why I always stress
the effect of all the abominable activities that are so popular these days. They destroy your mind. So you're going to have some humility and patience about it all. Best to put your mind into devotional service. Then it will become submissive. Don't try to fight it out on your own. Stick your mind to devotional service, and the internal potency will conquer the mind. You can't do it on your own. Shara, you have a question? Ezra always has questions.
How do we not let our upgrading to the greater bodies make our service weak? Like throughout a week, our week, why do we become weak from standing up a week?
You got to eat properly and sleep properly so you get physically strong. You're a bit too young to be, weak. So you got to learn how to take care of your body so that you can use it as an instrument for Krishna's service. You got to eat properly, rest properly, strengthen yourself. We had quite a few young weaklings. Will, he was a young weakling. Who else?
Roberto,
another young weakling. Yeah, I don't know what these guys are doing themselves these days, but they're really whipped out, whatever they're doing these days is really just taking their vitality. Yeah. Of course, illicit affairs when you're young will do that to you. Or if you just, in Roberto's case, you just watch video games 8 hours a day for 10 years, naturally, your body becomes very inactive, you're just sitting in front of the screen, Yeah, it's a problem. We get 18-year-olds who are just frail, like old men. So you have to go on a program to make yourself strong, materially and spiritually. It's like picking up a disease.
Like a while ago, you showed us a book with personality profiles, and it showed that different people can be categorized into different natures. Can you change the nature?
Yes! That's just like you change clothes, you can change your material nature. You can purify it.
But nature's not the same as like the categorization of violence.
In Kali Yuga, everything is jumbled up. The Shastra says, Kalo Sudra Sambhava. Everyone in Kali Yuga actually takes birth as a Sudra and becomes less. That's why you have a hard time discerning people's propensities, because everyone's born so unqualified. It's still there, but it's mixed with so many things. Can we change the nature or change the service? Which one are you talking about?
Well, can our nature change? Well, you say, I'll use myself
as an
example.
Where again?
I don't really feel like my nature is inclined to do
unbooked Krishna,
but.
Neither did I. Did you know that? I used to cry on Sankirtan. What do you think of that? Can you believe it? Yeah. Why am I doing this? It's not my nature. But then I kept thinking, my spiritual master loves to have his book distributed, so I'm going to love it, even though I hate it. That's what drove me. I hate it, but I'm going to love it. Now, not everybody may have that determination. That's what love will do to you. You've never loved anyone so much that even you do something you hate just to try to please that person? Yeah, I know. Well, I loved my spiritual master so much that I did something that I hated to do and was determined to love it. Are we doing something well?
Doing something that's outside your compass.
Well, it's not our job to purposely torture ourselves, you know. We can make a bed of nails for you, you know, you can lay on it at night, you know. Yeah. Or make a horsehair shirt. It's not a mechanical thing. We're talking about love. For the beloved, you undergo austerities. You never, even from the material understanding of love, so-called love, you never loved anyone enough that you would willfully undergo something that you hated to give pleasure to the beloved. So you say you never did that. You mean to tell me you never even underwent any minor inconveniences on behalf of anyone? Huh? You never washed anyone's laundry, huh? She won't tell us. But why did you do it? Yeah. Not that it was unconditional. You wanted something in return, but still, you know? You did a few things that normally you wouldn't do. You might have washed a few dishes for the person, or, you know, or washed a few clothes, or I don't know. Bhakti is about real love. So just because you tried to please somebody in the material world and got fried, doesn't mean you should stop trying to please. Right? Now is the time really to try to please someone. So it depends on what level of Krishna consciousness you want. Do you want the conditional level, the karma yoga level? I mean, generally that's the way we start off everybody here at the loft, is karma yoga. This is the karma yoga club. You're attached to acting a certain way, so we induce you to offer the fruits to Krishna. That's karma yoga. A subtle difference between karma yoga and bhakti. Bhakti, however, and a few of you here are performing bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga means never mind what I'm attached to in terms of way of acting. Let me give Krishna what he wants. That's bhakti. But, you know, we're not, it's not, you're not a demon if you're performing karma yoga. It's very nice. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, all that you do, all that you offer, whatever austerities you perform, all that you eat, do it for me. That's karma yoga. You're attached to acting in a certain way, so offer it to me, the results. So that's actually what goes on here. It's karma yoga. But underneath all the karma yoga, there's some currents at work to sweep everybody to a higher level. While you're chewing on your karma yoga, you know, something else is at work. Trying to get you to be attracted to Krishna's senses at any cost. That's the law of mystique. So I understand what you're saying about book distribution. I can easily understand. greatest fear was if I would meet my ex-fiance while I was distributing books. That was my greatest fear. And I did. I think the first time I was distributing books in the bus terminal, and she didn't see me. She was walking with some guy. The guy had his arm around her, and the wolfish look in his eyes. She was looking real miserable, like, you know, I'm not going to be satisfied with this. I said, yes, Bhagavatam is right. Another time I was distributing books, and she saw me and started coming after me. So I ran. I ran to a phone booth like I had to take a phone call, you know? I didn't even look back. I just... I didn't even try to think what she was thinking about. So she ran after me for a while, and then I, you know, she just was Krishna's grace. She just gave up, you know? So I was in the phone booth, you know? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna! Then another time I was stopping cars at an intersection and approaching them. You know, as they stop at the light, you know, you go up to the window and, hello? Yeah. And you drop a book in the car and ask for a donation. So there I was. And I knew I was in her neighborhood. So, you know, I had been going to that spot for like a year. I knew one day I'm going to run into her. I just knew. Sure enough, after about a year, car comes driving up to the red light. I walk up to it. There she is.
Hi.
So I just, you know, dropped a book in. Can you give a donation, please? She gave a donation. And, okay. So those were my big fears on book distribution. I hated book distribution, but I wanted to love it. And I was always afraid I'd run into my fiance. Can you believe it? So what are your fears? It's so humiliating, isn't it? You, the great Jan, daring to approach someone and begging for Krishna. Her Majesty, daring to approach someone as a beggar and being rebuffed. Oh, that's even worse. Bad enough she has to beg, but to be rebuffed. Don't you realize who you're refusing? It's a great way to acquire humility. But still, we don't force. If you want to make advancement, if you don't get your austerity from one thing, you should get it from another thing. That's fair enough. As long as it's something else, right? Okay. But then you should look for a way to sacrifice for Krishna in another way. Still, I know the challenge is always going to be lurking in the back of your mind. You can't stand it when there's something you can't do. You fix cars. You wander around India alone. This is one thing you can't do. What do you think about that? You're not man enough to do it. Only the men can do it. What do you say about that? Anyway, we want to please Krishna by pleasing Krishna's devotee. But if we really can't see our way to doing one service, still we need to be absorbed in something. Any other questions? Yes?
I'm not sure how to answer the question, but even though if we're doing something and we know the future what's going to happen, it's not so much fun. So what's it like for Krishna if he knows everything and his past life?
That's why Yogamaya is there, to surprise Krishna, even though he knows everything. The pastime energy of the Lord arranges surprises for him, even though he knows everything. Krishna can do whatever he likes. He can allow himself to be surprised, even though he's omniscient. It's like I was watching some fathers play with their sons, little boys, at the pool Saturday. And, you know, the fathers would pretend to be surprised. They would... the little son or daughter would like to act like he or she could push the father under the water. And so the father would agree to submerge under the water when the little boy or girl would push down on his shoulders. And then the father would pop up again. Oh, and you're like, surprise! And the kid would just laugh. So the father was actually enjoying it, you know? Pretending he was surprised. Oh, who pushed me under the water? Now I popped up. Oh. And you could see the fathers pushing their kids around on floats in the pool, you know, just getting right into it, you know? The kids just squealing with delight, and the father pushing the kid along on one of these, you know, the kid's on top of this float, you know, and the father's pushing, you know, walking in the pool, you know? But I noticed the fathers liked it better than serving the kid by pushing the kid around. They liked it when the kid would dominate them. When the kid would go, oh, daddy, daddy, go under the water, go under the water. And the father would just like it, okay. Go under the water. So you can see that Krishna, you can understand why Krishna likes it more to be ordered around by his devotees. To be chastised by Mother Yasoda, to be criticized by the gopis. He likes that more than all the official prayers of the Vedas. All right, Hare Krishna.